We're back, and the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, also known as MBS, goes on a two-week tour to work on any fallout relative to the Jamal Khashoggi murder. MBS experienced some overt criticism, but mostly praise from any number of leaders. In return, MBS promised Bahrain a new pipeline, a new hospital for Mauritania, and possibly a $5 billion causeway linking Saudi Arabia with Egypt. Meanwhile, back in the U.S., there were mixed messages amongst members of the Trump administration, culminating with CIA Director Haspel's presentation to a number of senators, many of whom stated there was no doubt that the prince, the crown prince, was behind the killing. Joining us on the line, Gerald Feierstein, Senior Vice President of the Middle East Institute. And Mr. Feierstein had served in the Foreign Service for 41 years, ending his career and retiring in May of 2016. Mr. Feierstein, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be with you today.
So there seems to have been, and I hope I'm not reading this wrong, there's been mixed messages out of this administration as to what exactly they have, what evidence they have, their appreciation of the evidence. And out comes Senator Lindsey Graham the other day saying there's no doubt what evidence we have that the Crown Prince is involved.
That's absolutely correct. And that's despite, of course, the visits to the Hill by Secretaries Pompeo and Mattis a week earlier, in which they said that the administration didn't believe that there was a smoking gun. Lindsey Graham said specifically it wasn't a smoking gun, it was a smoking saw, referring to the bone saw that was allegedly used to dismember Mr. Khashoggi. So the Senate, having heard from CIA Director Haspel, believes that they came to a very different conclusion than the senior administration figures, including the president.
And then what also kind of lent some doubts to this saga was that allegedly they were not allowing the CIA director to go and testify before Congress last week. And what was up with that?
Well, I think that they learned a hard lesson that other administrations have learned to their regret earlier on, and that is that when the senators decide that somebody is withholding information from them that they want, they can make it very painful, and that's what they did. There was an assertion that Gina Haspel was supposed to come with Pompeo and Mattis. She didn't come. And Lindsey Graham, among other senators, basically said that they were going to hold a number of administration priorities to ransom until Haspel appeared. So she went up and did the briefing that they wanted.
It seems to me, just from afar, that this administration is almost trying to finesse its way through this. But is that realistic, understanding that really the country of Turkey is on a full court press relative to their investigation, and they're going to get to the bottom of it one way or the other?
Well, I think that probably the administration is not going to be able to succeed. You have strong bipartisan views in the Senate about this. In fact, there's a resolution on the Hill today, which basically says explicitly that the senators believe Mohammed bin Salman was responsible for the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. You're going to have a Democratic majority in the House in a few weeks, and that is going to increase the pressure on the Hill for the administration to acknowledge Mohammed bin Salman's involvement, responsibility for what happened. So, yes, you're absolutely right. The administration would love to see this issue go away. But there are a lot of people on both sides of the aisle in Congress who are not going to allow that to happen.
We got to get to a break. Can you stay with us? Because I'd like to talk about what is going to be the what are the downstream implications. And I get that we have to manage and massage this relationship very carefully, but that cuts both ways. And I want to get your thoughts on that when we continue this conversation when we return. We're talking to Gerald Feierstein, Senior Vice President of the Middle East Institute. We'll be right back after the break. We're back and we're talking to Gerald Feierstein, Senior Vice President of the Middle East Institute. And Mr. Feierstein, you know, we were talking before about managing and massaging this relationship very carefully with Saudi Arabia. And we've heard the president talk many times about proposed billions of dollars of purchases that the Saudis have promised to make of U.S. products. But how is it that we're going to save face around the world in this issue? And what are the downstream implications for us if we take the wrong step here?
Well, it is a very complicated issue. It's a difficult issue. And I think that any administration would be feeling its way along here quite gingerly, because you're quite right. The U.S.-Saudi relationship, which is very old, it really goes back to the end of the Second World War, has been built around the two key concerns that the U.S. has. One, of course, stability of the global energy markets. Saudi Arabia is a key player in that. And also regional security and stability. And the Saudis have cooperated with the United States for this entire period of time, including some very high priority U.S. commitments, the war to liberate Kuwait, the intervention to prevent the Soviets from securing their position in Afghanistan. That kind of relationship continues to this day. So we want to be able to preserve that fundamental relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia. And yet there is a major question that many people have about whether or not Mohammed bin Salman, as an individual leader, is someone that we can do business with. Is he a reliable partner, or is he simply too tarnished and too unpredictable for the United States to work with? And I think that that's an issue not only for the United States, it's an issue for many Western countries, the UK, France, and others. And I'm not sure that we have a clear answer on that. I believe that it's very important for us to get an ambassador on the ground in Riyadh. We haven't had an ambassador there since the end of the Obama administration. And we have somebody with clear clout and the confidence of the president, who can talk to the king and can talk to other Saudi leaders and try to work out a way that we can have a relationship with Saudi Arabia that doesn't depend on someone who we have serious concerns about.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because it's been one of the areas that I've been very critical of this president. Having forward-leaning, out-front intelligence that you get from your State Department officials, whether directly or indirectly or however it comes, is, I believe, having come out of the law enforcement world, of significant value. But this president doesn't believe that too much, does he?
Well, certainly the slowness of his appointments raises a serious question about that. And, you know, certainly in the Middle East, in key capitals, we have not had ambassadorial representation in Riyadh, in Abu Dhabi, in Cairo, in Amman, Jordan. These are critical embassies, critical relationships that need to be attended at the highest levels. You need to have people who can say that they speak with the authority of the president, in order to make sure that those governments understand what U.S. policy is, where the United States is going. And we haven't had that kind of representation. So absolutely, it hurts us, and it undermines U.S. credibility in that region of the world and elsewhere. It's not only in the Middle East that we've been lacking senior-level representation.
I kind of chuckled the other day when I saw Putin with his, I don't know if it was a high five or what it was, with the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. They have always been kind of a buffer for us in holding Russia at bay in the Middle East, have they not?
Absolutely. And that, again, goes all the way back to the end of the Second World War, where Saudi Arabia was a critical partner in ensuring that the Soviet Union at that time couldn't expand its interests into the region, couldn't threaten the global energy markets, and the Saudis have been really critical partners for us in all of those initiatives over the years.
So when we talk about, you were talking about the reliability of Mohammed bin Salman, is that just the reliability as to how he deals with his domestic issues, or do we have serious concerns about internationally? And in particular, do we have any thoughts that he might align with the Russians?
Well, I don't think that the issue of alignment with the Russians is that significant at this point. Certainly over the years, Saudi Arabia and Russia have worked more closely together on issues related to oil production and the price of energy. The Saudis have also opened up and become much closer to the Chinese over the years. And I think that Chinese engagement, involvement in the Middle East is perhaps a more significant issue for the United States than Russian engagement is. But overall, I think that, part of the criticism of Mohammed bin Salman is, in fact, some of the decisions that Saudi Arabia has made since he came first as Minister of Defense and then more recently as the Crown Prince. And that includes the decision to intervene in the Yemen civil war, as well as the confrontation between Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates with Qatar, and as well as what remains unexplained, what they're trying to accomplish when the Saudis effectively kidnapped the Prime Minister of Lebanon and forced him to announce his resignation. So these are also areas that I think for many people have raised real questions about the direction and the stability of Mohammed bin Salman's decision making.
The only thing that I kind of chuckle at is that our administration, the Trump administration, and the Crown Prince's administration, they both have had difficulty coming to what the story is as it relates to this Khashoggi case. And I find that problematic, especially on our front. Something as important as this, we just amongst our own administration, we can't seem to get our hands around what the messaging is going to be about this moving forward. And it seems as though that it tends to repeat itself in a lot of our foreign activities and a lot of the issues around diplomacy, that we just can't get our story straight.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. To be blunt about it, I think that the issue is really the White House. In my experience over the years in a situation like this, you would have the National Security Council, a National Security Advisor, in this case John Bolton, bringing all of the various departments and agencies together and hammering out a policy and a set of guidelines for what people are saying, and also what the administration's position is going to be on these issues. But that doesn't seem to be happening right now, and you have everybody going off in their own directions in ways that are unhelpful in terms of articulating a clear U.S. policy and a clear U.S. objective on a number of key issues.
So what do you see as the next step as it relates to the possibility of sanctions, or where do they go from here? Because obviously the tug of war between Congress and the administration is quickly coming to an end. The story's out. Something's going to have to happen.
Well, and I think that there's a good chance that that you're going to see in the next few days the Senate voting on a resolution to perhaps block arms sales to Saudi Arabia or to impose other kinds of sanctions. Whether or not the House of Representatives takes it up in this lame duck session is a little bit of a question. I think earlier on it looked unlikely that the House was going to do anything, which means, of course, that whatever the Senate does will simply die at the end of this term. And anything that they do beyond that would have to be taken up anew in the new Congress beginning in January. So, you know, it may be that that after all of this, not very much comes out of it practically. But I think symbolically, regardless of what happens with the votes, this is a very clear signal both to the administration and to the Saudis that the level of anger and frustration on Capitol Hill about Saudi policies, about the Jamal Khashoggi murder, about some of the other decisions.
Mr. Firestein, I apologize. I got to get to a hard break. I just don't mean to cut you off, but I have to. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your insight today and taking time out for us today as well.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
All righty. Have a great week. We'll be right back after the break. Give us a call, 260-1870. This is Newell on WWL. On a Blue Runner opinion poll, President Trump still doesn't want to condemn Saudi Crown Prince for the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Many U.S. senators, including key Republicans, do. Who do you side with? 86% side with the bipartisan Senate group and only 14% with the president. Let's go to line two. Rashard, New Orleans. What say you, Rashard?
Hey, Scoot, my main man. First of all, Scoot.
Wait. This is not Scoot, dude.
I'm sorry, Sheriff, but I just want to give you credit. The last time you had me on, you allowed me to express some things then. After me expressing, it was talking about racism. And the guy came on after me say, I was a black racist. And you held up for me. You said, well, no, I don't know that guy like that. But he do have some very interesting opinion.
Yes, you
do. I want to appreciate that you've done that. Now, I want to say also, Tommy, Tommy bought me for 30 days, bro. I don't know why.
You're on double secret probation? You're on double secret probation?
Tommy put me on probation for 30 days, and I don't like that, Noah. Now, you know I'm Muslim.
All right.
See that Saudi prince?
Mm-hmm.
You know I don't take sides. I get all this. See that Saudi prince? I want him in my jail, Noah. I want him and the people that he ordered to carry that out. Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles can see through that. I don't know. Dow is getting paid. And the other one, you got Pompey and what you call them. They up there. They just gone wrong.
Pompeo and Mattis, yeah.
Okay, that was so foul what they did to the American people.
And, Rashard, I got to tell you, you know, and part of what you're saying, I agree with you. When I started seeing the mixed messaging coming out of the administration, I said, Houston, we got a problem.
Because
this is, in my view, the low-hanging fruit is getting everybody on the same page, albeit a complex issue. But when you go out front, there has to be a singular, consistent message. And, you know, I held off doing a show on this because I was trying to figure out where are they going with this thing. And I'm not sure they know where they're going with it, quite
now,
frankly.
Like I say, I'm Muslim. And after a Muslim's death, 3 days we're supposed to be in the ground, Noel. Now, I listened to the show. I ain't been calling. I listened to all the shows, all three. You, Tommy, and Stu, but I hadn't been calling. This is the first time I called since the last time we talked. But however, you know, this is the thing, man. We got to treat people like human beings. I don't care if you're black, white, or green.
Absolutely.
I don't care if you're gay, straight. I don't care if you're gay, straight, or in between. You got to treat people like a human being.
Absolutely,
you know?
Rashard. Especially
how we do it in New Orleans.
We will agree on that. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Don on the North Shore. What say you, Don?
Thank you for taking my call, Sheriff. You know, on this Khashoggi thing, I got to say, I think we have allowed the media to push us out over in front of our skis, if you know what I'm talking about here, if you understand the euphemism there.
Yeah, I got it.
I'm sure you do. Well, we got to look at the first thing. First, about Khashoggi. Let's look at the facts about Khashoggi first to decide, is it even worth getting into the foreign affairs field for? He's played both sides of the fence for multiple years over there in the Middle East. He's been on the Muslim Brotherhood side. He's been anti-state, pro-state, anti-Muslim Brotherhood.
But why does that matter, Don? Why does that matter?
Because you've made a lot of enemies. So let's take that first. That's just one instance.
Okay, it's one thing to make enemies, but to have the leader of one of our ally leaders.
I'm not saying it wasn't horrific and it should have never been done. Let me make that very clear. I'm not saying it wasn't horrific and it never should have been done. But I'm just laying the facts of the case out. That's one. Two, while he was a resident of the United States, he is a Saudi citizen.
Correct.
It occurred in a Saudi embassy, which is Saudi territory. And even though it occurred in an embassy, it occurred in an embassy in a foreign country, not our country.
Right.
So we've got to take all that and say the only reason the media is involved in this is simple. Because he's a journalist. If it wasn't a journalist, Sheriff, be honest, if it wasn't a journalist.
No, I get it. I get it. But it's also in a string of stuff in a very short period of time that Mohammed bin Salman has been involved in. You know, the issue in Qatar, the issue in Lebanon, the issue in Yemen, and now Khashoggi. And that's why I wanted to have this guy on from the Middle, Gerald Feierstein from the Middle East Institute, having served in the Middle East for almost 40 years. He understands the dynamics there. That's why I honed in on the reliability of this guy, whether or not he was talking about domestically or internationally. And it's on both fronts because, the human rights violations that are going on there under his, allegedly, he's locked his mother up in the basement of where they live over there. I mean, this guy's a little bit off the rails. I mean,
I don't disagree. I'm gonna use the word my mama used to use when I was little. He wacko.
Yeah, but the problem is that Saudi has been, and that's why I brought it up, a huge buffer for us with these Russians and the Soviets. And I'm not so sure that we can rely on him anymore. And I really believe folks like Lindsey Graham and others that have been saying for a while now, even before the Khashoggi thing, Lindsey Graham said, this is not a guy we want to hitch our wagon to.
Look, I agree with all of that, Sheriff, but I think to allow the media to frame this, we need to do this because of Khashoggi, is letting us get out in front of our skis instead of saying, look, that's a decision
the administration has to make as to what their intent is. But let me tell you this, when they can't get to a consistent messaging amongst themselves, their own administration, that's a telltale sign that Houston, we have a problem.
I agree, they need to go to Houston.
You know, and we're not going to get anywhere until we all get on the same sheet of music, and that continues to be the issue. But Don, thanks so much for calling. Got to get to a break. I've just run out of the bumper music there. But stay with us. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL. Just a reminder, we're getting ready to give those Saints tickets away to the Panthers game on Sunday, December 30th. We'll have a pair of tickets to give away. This is all you got to do. When you hear Bobby Hebert say, "Who dat?", he'll give you the number to call in. And if you are the eighth caller, you'll be who datting with the rest of the Who Dat Nation as the Saints play the Panthers in the Dome. On a text line, when taking a poll, I need to ask people being polled, are you willing to put sanctions on Saudi Arabia if there's a potential for losing your job? Russia and China more than willing to take up the slack on any sales of military equipment. And that was the point I was trying to make earlier. I understand that it's a difficult thing to manage, and you got to manage and massage it very carefully. And obviously, Mohammed bin Salman knows that because he just went on a comeback tour. 2 weeks, he visited all kinds of different countries and promised to build hospitals, $5 billion causeway, possibly, to connect Saudi Arabia with Egypt. Also talked about a new pipeline with Bahrain. So he's obviously on the giveaway tour, quite frankly, in order to make sure that ensure that his allies don't leave him. But doesn't that bring up the threshold question? Are we to be bought? And is he reliable? And if the mentality is that they go off doing these horrific acts that they could just buy us off. And I heard the president say upon the billions upon billions upon billions of dollars that they promised to buy of U.S. products as to whether or not, one, you take that into consideration. I suggest you do. But by the same token, is that going to be the driving consideration as to how you're going to resolve this issue? And is there no room for sanctions at all or any type of action that we can take relative to at least saying, hey, cut it out. We don't want it. Straighten up your act. We can't sit here side by side when you're off doing ignorant and stupid things and murdering somebody and chopping them up with a saw just because it's in your embassy on foreign soil in the country of Turkey. Now, the Turks and the Saudis don't really get along very well, so that's why the Turks are off and running, for more reasons than one, engaged in this very aggressive criminal investigation. And I say that in a real sense and in a positive way. They need to be. They should not allow this kind of conduct to occur on their soil. It doesn't matter if he's the crown, whatever. You shouldn't be chopping people up with a saw inside of these embassies on foreign soil. We got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Give us a shout, 260-1870. Hey, folks. We're back, and Nelda Runyon. We want to congratulate Nelda. She will be our guest at the Saints-Panthers game on Sunday, December 30th in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Enjoy the game and go Saints for News Talk and Sports Powerhouse of the Gulf South, WWL. Nelda Runyon, have a great time. Let's go to line three. Talk to Bobby from New Orleans. What say you, Bobby?
Hey, Sheriff Norman. Hey. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Oh, great. Thank you. That's good. I'm just going to keep it light. I wanted to comment on my favorite Elton John songs.
That's a lot lighter than the Khashoggi murder, for sure.
Absolutely. My favorite is Someone Saved My Life Tonight, probably number one. Philadelphia Freedom, number two, and Daniel would be number three.
All so, good songs. Any yeah. significance to those for you?
It just reminds me of my high school days. Someone Saved My Life Tonight, Philadelphia Freedom. Basically, when I graduated around 76, around that time frame, and Daniel, I was still living in New England when that song came out. Right around 1972. So, I'll be honest with you, there isn't a song he made that isn't really good, you know? The guy's extremely talented.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the show tonight. I understand that it's sold out. I was saying earlier, when they released the tickets about a year ago, or maybe even a little over a year ago, we were sitting in an airport actually, and we're both looking on our phones and got this alert. And some other friends that were with us, we said, let's figure out about going to a concert or something. And we didn't know that one had actually was able to get through to get the tickets, because a lot of times it's very difficult to do so. And obviously, he's on this farewell tour. Someone said it might be as long as 3 years to get through this tour. I'm not sure how long that is. Scoot will know.
Have a good time and enjoy yourself.
All righty, Bobby. Thank you so much. Just to close out this topic, President Trump still doesn't want to condemn the Saudi crown prince for the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Many U.S. senators, including key Republicans, do. Who do you side with, the bipartisan Senate group or President Trump? 62% of the respondents side with the bipartisan Senate group on this particular issue. There was a text that came in that said about being on the same page. the point I was trying to make is that the administration, when they send out a message, it can't be a mixed messages from different cabinet heads about how they're going to approach a particular situation. That's not how this works. The administration has to have its best foot forward, one message, clear, concise, to the point as to what their next step is going to be. It doesn't mean it's going to be the end-all, tell-all as it relates to this occurrence, but it at least needs to be consistent. With that, Scoot joins me in the studio. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
So what was the question that you had for me?
About how long the Elton John tour is.
I don't know.
I heard on the radio earlier, someone said he's going to be on tour for 3 years
That's not a farewell tour.
No. That's a forever tour.
Yeah, you know, I have never seen Elton John, and to be honest with you, I have been so busy with doing some things that I didn't even get tickets for tonight.
Yeah, we're going. We got them about a year ago, actually, when they had the early release. And I saw him the last time he was here, and he was phenomenal.
I'll have to see if I can find.
I think you might be able to finagle something. You have connections.
I'll see if I can.
Look, you've only been in the music industry, what, 90, 80, 60?
Something like that. I mean, I don't know, since radio was invented. I mean, shortly after Marconi did that test run.
Right, absolutely.
I was there in the
morning.
You
were there.
So I want to talk about the hundreds of free tickets to Jazz Fest that were given to department heads and managers of the city of New Orleans.
What was that about? I hadn't read that story yet.
Yeah, they were just given hundreds of tickets, and they were supposed to use them for official
use. I was always told
they
don't give anything out free at
well,
Jazz Fest.
They gave it to the city of New Orleans, and this happened under the Landry administration. And one employee says this has been happening since 1988, and they get all these tickets, and they can give them to whoever they want. And some claim, well, we use it for official business use. But, I mean, we're talking about 200 to 400 tickets for a department head.
Man.
And so I applaud Mayor Cantrell because she's going to shut that down.
Good.
That's good.
Good.
Also, should President Trump fire the labor secretary who secretly gave a light sentence to a rich, influential man who developed a plan for having a regular flow of young teenage girls come to his house for sex? I think that's a legitimate question. I'll read that again. After
I go to one function last night. I didn't keep up with all of this.
and a Harvard professor says that based on a portion size of food, you should only eat 6 French fries from the McDonald's French fries.
Yeah, well, that ain't happening.
I mean, again, who has the willpower to eat 6?
I don't need to tease myself that bad. So, all righty, Scoot's up next. We'll have a great show, I'm sure, as always. I appreciate everybody's participation. See you tomorrow.